This is Talk Star Wars,
the official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk.
Welcome back to Talk Star Wars, the official podcast of talkstarwars.co.uk. I'm Mark.
I'm Stephen.
And I'm Rob.
And we've had a week off. Hello. We've had a week off. How are we doing, guys? You all right?
Yes, thank you. Not bad at all.
How's it back, Steve?
Yeah, doing good.
It's all right. It's there. I think it still exists. in an agony fashion.
Every time
you
move.
You've got a backpack as well, Mark.
I have, a little bit, yeah. I'm actually suffering with referred pain now from the positions that I'm getting myself into walking around with a sore back. Everything else is
right.
I'm like Yoda.
You've been playing with your lightsaber again, haven't you?
Yeah. I've been hobbling around like a little green Jedi sage.
Yeah, you want to do that. Just throw away your walking stick and then just start doing backflips everywhere like Yoda.
Perhaps I should
what
see
could possibly go wrong?
I left myself replaced with the CGI version, shall I? Perhaps I should wait for Mark, the special edition.
I would pay to see that just once. Just a CGI person just shopped in over the top of the existing person. That'd be amazing.
For no good reason.
That'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
I need to
and
get
Frank Oz turning in his grave.
Yeah. Like a rotisserie chicken.
We're gonna get to one of these CGI human beings later on. If you look ahead in the show notes, there is something.
Oh yes, foreshadowing.
There is a disturbance in the Force.
Oh dear. Are we talking about Snoke?
No. Well.
No.
I don't know. Depends. The rumours pan out, but at this point, no, not Snoke. But I tell you what. I'm gonna throw a bit of a curveball in here because I don't think I put it in the show notes. Did you see that Darth Maul film?
Yes.
How spectacular was that?
Oh my god,
really
that was
cool.
Awesome.
Really good. Awesome.
Yeah, very cool.
I'll tell you what. You know what? It makes you wonder. I mean, it's a very simple premise, like a group of Jedi hunting down, you know, Darth Maul on a planet, and they all have a big scrap for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't need much else for Star Wars, do you?
It was better. It was a better presentation of that Darth Maul character than the Phantom Menace.
Yeah,
I think it was good because he didn't say a word.
He didn't say anything.
Right.
But
I was watching for that because I was watching the whole thing, thinking, is he going to talk? Because obviously that voice, the Peter Serafinovich voice, is very iconic. So you'd think that if you're going to do it, you've got to do it better or not bother.
Yeah.
And
they
did. They
chose the wiser route of the two.
Probably for the best, for sure.
But there was something about that portrayal of Darth Maul that I really liked. There was a conflict there. There was some sort of compassion or a grudging respect.
See, I didn't like that. That was the bit I didn't like about it. I actually found one of the things I really liked about Darth Maul in Episode 1 is he just fights with pure venom, and everything he does is aggressive and, you know, powerful and just angry. And that was that kind of... It didn't even undo it, obviously, because it's a fan film, but it just didn't speak to the same things I loved about Darth Maul in Episode 1.
Right.
Wasn't just, that before Episode 1, though, when he was just becoming the Sith?
Yeah.
Because he makes the choice that Adam Driver has to make, doesn't he, with the girl?
Yes, he does, yeah.
And I've kind of... I know what you mean, but I actually like the way they kind of did that.
Maybe you're right, actually, yeah.
But
I hadn't really thought
that. You have to make a kill to fully complete your training.
Yeah.
And
something
else as well.
I
mean, you have to be wary, really, when you're coming to these things with your critical faculties engaged. You have to be careful, I think, how much you bring to it. So I watched that film, and I tell you, I had a blast. It was, I think, about 17 minutes long. We should say, really, it's Darth Maul Apprentice. It's filmed by a director named Sean Boo. You can find it certainly on our YouTube channel. I've put it in a playlist.
It's doing the rounds, I think. I'm sure I've seen it pop up in a few places.
It's being highly, highly celebrated at the moment.
And rightly so.
Rightly so, yeah. It's absolutely splendid.
Really, really good.
Now, what I mean about bringing stuff to it is I watched the whole thing and I was really impressed by the economy of it. The storytelling, everything was so lean, but it went one step further than most fan films, which is really just, I want to show off lightsaber skills, I want to show off my ability in After Effects. There really was a narrative, there really was a plot there. And
absolutely,
the extra little bit I brought to it, whether it was intended or not, but by the end of it, that conflict that we see, that grudging respect that he has for the Padawan, I was wondering whether or not he was getting ideas above his station. So he's looking at her thinking, I could take you and train you as my own.
Yeah.
And then we can challenge Palpatine. You know that Sith thing? It's never-ending cycle, yeah. Isn't it?
Mm.
I don't know whether that was I don't know whether that was intentional or if I've just read way more into that than
I think every Sith knows that his Padawan's going to try and kill him.
Absolutely.
That's the way it
100%.
Works.
100%. Yeah, that's the rule.
Do they know that, though?
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. They know the rule.
Did the Emperor know that Vader would kill him?
Yep.
He knew that all the Sith knows. That the rule of two suggests that every Sith who's in the position of master knows that at some point they're going to be beaten by a better Sith. Now, obviously, they don't know which one that's going to be, because for all Palpatine knows, that's Maul or Dooku or, you know, Vader or whatever, or the next one after Vader, were there to be one. Yeah. But the point is, they always know that at some point they're going to be surpassed, and that's the whole, and that's how the power increases.
Yeah,
and that's the idea behind
it. So will it only ever be two Sith at any one time?
Yeah, because there was. Correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, because I'm not really much on the expanded universe. But I think it was it Darth Bane who introduced the rule of two, because he was tired of the infighting and the backstabbing and the squabbling. So he decided. They'd introduce his rule of two, focus it so that it's one master, one apprentice, and then when the apprentice is strong enough, he'll destroy the master. And it's up to the master then, so we've seen this play out as well on screen with Sidious, it's up to him to be able to dispatch the apprentice before he becomes too much of a threat, and then he'll have another one. You know, we've mentioned this before, I've described it as the Sith Lords are like rows of shark's teeth, there's always one ready to roll back into place. So, Sidious had Dooku on the line even whilst he was using Maul, and then down the line you have like Ventress and all that, all these other people that are waiting to jump up into their position. So
yeah, well, it's a really cool concept. There's a lot of expanded universe stuff that touches on different approaches of how the Sith operate. So the Darth Bane rule of two comes about during the trilogy because he tries to study under the Sith on Korriban, which is the Old Republic's kind of established world for the sort of the Sith base, as it were, and he gets kind of disillusioned with how they sort of, like you said, how they squabble and how they infight and how they all weaken the power by distributing it among themselves and having so many points. And I think also there's an element of subterfuge to it as well, if I remember rightly. One of the things that he likes about the Rule of Two is that they can operate in a much more secretive way than the Sith, who are this large, unwieldy kind of beast. And that's one of the things he thinks is wrong with the Jedi, which there's too many of them, and because they're everywhere, widespread throughout the galaxy, in order to succeed and challenge them and dispatch them, you have to be a small, efficient kind of unit.
An insidious force.
How many Jedi were there before? Before Episode 4?
Oh, it depends. Whereabouts are we talking in the?
How many got killed in the big?
In Order 66.
Basically, all of them except for Yoda.
Well, that's what we thought. I mean, they keep switching this up now, Steve. With Star Wars Rebels we've got.
Yeah.
One of the apprentices at the time, Kanan Jarrus, he managed to escape and go into hiding, and then he turns up later on and he becomes mentor to a force sensitive kid who's about the same age as Luke and Leia. I think he's exactly the same age as Luke and Leia. It seems to be whenever the storytellers need to pull out a Jedi in hiding, they'll pull out a Jedi in hiding. But it's,
pretty much.
At this point, I heard something great said, mentioned the other day. I can't remember where I heard it, but they said that the Jedi's it seems to be the Jedi rule that if you go up against a Sith Lord and you come off on the wrong side of that battle, it's your obligation to go into hiding. So we've had Yoda disappear into hiding, we've had Obi-Wan disappear into hiding, and now
like shame.
Sorry, say again.
Like shame.
I don't know about Shane, but I think it's more about you're a valuable resource. If you can't beat them, hide until like for Obi-Wan, it's hide until Luke's old enough, and then train like give him the skills he needs to come in, and then you go and take on the Sith together.
Yeah, it's an interesting premise, but then at the same time, I would argue that in Episode 3, Obi-Wan pretty definitively won his fight.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? He's, you know, he comes out of it. Maybe it's in the sense of achieving your objective rather than defeating them, because he very obviously won in terms of a fight. He very clearly dispatched Anakin, left him in bits on Mustafar. So it must be a little bit deeper.
They could have done it better. Yeah, I mean,
because like the higher ground thing, I was like, what? I could have beaten Vader. I could have beaten Anakin then, cause if I had the higher ground.
Never played an RPG, have you, Steve? It does help. These things, elevated terrain, plus one to everything.
But he's a Jedi. He could jump a little bit higher. He didn't have to jump off the thing. He could have just jumped over the top of him, or he could have gone a little bit downstream.
You have to remember, Steve, think back to Episode 1 when the Jedi did that super fast run, that blurry dash run they did on the Federation ship. They never use that skill again, so the Jedi only have the skill given to them when it serves the plot.
Yes.
Without being too critical that, you know, that situation, it's a bit of a deus ex machina, isn't it? That situation in Revenge of the Sith required that Anakin make poor choices and not really not really use every skill that he had at his disposal, and then Obi-Wan could take him out. But he didn't take him out, because really what he should have done is just force push him into the lava and brush his hands off and go home.
Yeah.
It was the way he said, it's over, Anakin. I had the higher ground. Well, it's not over. They're both intact at that point. It's far from over.
Can you imagine what a bummer ending if Anakin had said, fair enough, here's my lightsaber.
Yeah, I'll get you next time, mate. Come on.
Should we go fair enough, you're
walk
6 feet
higher. Walk away, blood, walk away.
Yeah,
let's go and have a calf. But you know that rule that this isn't on the show notes either. I wrote really shitty. I swore. I've written really, really poor show notes this week. there is another thing that ties into that Jedi run away and hide.
There is another.
The
let your expletives flow through you.
You want this, don't you? I'm gonna have to get the beeper on that one. Bob Iger gave a presentation to some shareholders this week and mentioned that there are a number of Star Wars films in the offing, which we all kind of knew. He said that elsewhere. Somebody, I don't think it was Bob Iger, but somebody off the back of that said that one of them was, I think it's somebody that's working on a production, one of them's a Mace Windu movie.
Oh, right.
So that Jedi, like coming off on the wrong side of a duel and going into hiding, might see Sam Jackson back in the Star Wars universe. Is that something we'd want to see?
I'm fine with it. To be honest, I'd prefer it to be before rather than after Episode 3. That seems like a bit of a cop out to me. But I'd love to see another. You know, I'd love to see some more kind of depth to these characters in terms of how they came to be in the forms we see them. So I'd be up for seeing a.
It'd be a pre-prequel.
It would be a Star Wars story. So it looks at the moment like all the Star Wars stories are going to be set in the prequel era.
Which is fine. Yeah, I mean, it's fine by me. I just, like I say, I wouldn't want to see him having, oh, no, he survived after all. I mean, come on. I've already said I think Order 66 becomes less effective every time they announce something new. And I don't want that to be the one that's, you know.
That's very much the impression I'm getting, though, Rob. I don't want to, don't want to dampen your enthusiasm. But if you think about the logistics of making a Mace Windu movie before Revenge of the Sith, I think it would be very difficult to not use other Jedi.
That's true.
You wouldn't be able to. It probably wouldn't be a good idea to bring Obi-Wan and Anakin into that story with a Mace Windu, because they crowd the frame a little bit, don't they?
Sure.
And how then can you divorce Mace from everything that's going on in the prequel era?
You can. I mean, you could still have him do something that's not. I mean, there's a big gap between Episode 1 and Episode 2, isn't there?
Yeah.
So there's, you know, in terms of time has passed. Yeah, exactly. Time has passed for a fair whack there, and there's not really any explanation of what's going on in the meantime. So there's a big chunk of unexplored story territory there, especially now they've removed all the Clone Wars and prequel EU stuff from canon. You know, a lot of that becomes big open space. So that could be, I mean, I'm again, like I said, I'm well up for seeing a Mace Windu movie. I just don't want it to be another one where somebody survived after all and all that stuff. I'd like to see it turn up
that's
in the era.
I'm getting, though.
I don't want to see it because I don't want any reference to the originals. And if they start saying, oh, well, this happened and that, as far as I'm concerned, the originals never happened. Like, I mean, not in that sense. The story kind of did, in a way, but
yeah,
not.
You mean 1, 2, and 3, Steve?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, I don't even see those as Star Wars. I know that sounds awful, but I don't see Star Wars films.
Blasphemy.
I know. I just heretic. Don't. I see them as, like, steaming turds in the water pipe.
And episode 3, which we can all agree is the best one.
What, out of all the Star Wars movies?
No, out of the prequel movies.
Oh, out of the prequel, absolutely. No, you're right there. Then 3, 1, 2, obviously, is the.
I would, yeah, that's my ordering of those 3, 2.
Yeah, I think we can agree there, possibly. It's 2 is dreadful. It is literally a number 2.
It's about an hour too long. That's the trouble with it.
Yeah. I like the only bit I like was the asteroid field thing with Boba Fett.
Oh, that was the sonic bombs. They were really cool.
Yeah, they were great.
They sounded fantastic in a cinema as well.
Yeah, really that good. Would be in your hypercut, wouldn't it, Mark? That bit.
Yeah, that is in there.
The only thing that was missing was the asteroid field music. Da, 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 da. If it had that,
we like original John Williams, don't we, in our movies? I don't want to see him sort of pull on the old favourites, pull them into service. I want him to always write new stuff.
The Superman theme tune just crops up somewhere. Come on.
E.T.
Yeah. They've turned up.
Steve, you just mentioned Boba Fett. There's still rumours that every time I say that character's name, you're going to do that, aren't you? But Boba Fett.
Boba Fett? Where? it's Boba Fett. Boba Fett.
We might be getting a Boba Fett movie.
Mm-hmm.
That looks like that was initially planned to be the movie directed by Josh Trank, which would come out at some point after. Where would that come out? After Episode 9, I think.
Oh, Episode 9. Okay.
Yeah. After.
Oh, sorry, you mean release
in
order?
Release order. But I've heard whispers that it's going to be set at around the same sort of time period as the Han Solo film, which is coming out in 2018. It's going to be around that sort of period, which we know now.
Okay.
I think we cover this later in the show notes, but we know now that that's going to be an origin story for Han and Chewie.
Yep.
If we get a Boba Fett movie around that sort of time, we're going to be very close to the stuff we already know.
Mm.
Now, you know, I think it was on the other podcast, the After Dark Side, I mentioned my Hollywood pitch for the Fantastic Four.
Yes.
I also wrote a Hollywood pitch for Boba Fett. And just to give you the very short version of it, it takes place with Boba Fett being a much older character after the Sarlacc pit, like getting out of the Sarlacc pit.
Okay.
Which was another really cool fan film, actually. Did you see a little short trailer of Boba Fett getting out of the Sarlacc and calling the Slave One to him?
No.
I'll have to try and find that. That is absolutely spectacular. That is. It's really short, just like a heartbeat. It's more of a tone poem. It's really good. But I had an idea that perhaps he would be well served as. Have you ever seen True Grit?
No.
You've not seen True Grit? You should try and see True Grit. It doesn't matter which one you see. But it's pretty much an old cowboy, an old bounty hunter. Who's hired by a young girl to do a job. She just wants to go and get revenge. I thought a Boba Fett film would be really well hung on that sort of framework.
Boba Fett
being hired by a young female lead character who would need him to achieve the A-Bs and C's of it all. But his solution to everything is just to destroy everybody. Like if you've got a problem in a room, kill everyone, get rid of the problem. And she keeps trying to stop him from doing that, you know?
Oh, like Terminator 2.
And I thought the little girl before, because I wrote the Hollywood pitch before I saw episode 7, I thought the little girl could have been Rey. in my Hollywood pitch, but obviously we know that couldn't work.
How are they going to pull that off, Major? Because I find it very hard to attach myself to actors without a helmet, Matron.
Say it again, how Steve.
How can you pull off a man's helmet? No, that's wrong. How can you pull off a character when he's wearing a helmet all the time? Because you can't get that attachment to him.
They did it with Vader in the original trilogy.
Yeah, but he's not the star. True. We're talking about making a Boba Fett movie. It's a Luke movie, isn't it? And a Han movie and a Leia movie.
Well, this would be the thing, though, wouldn't it? I mean, True Grit, really, Rooster is kind of the central character, but the little girl, I'm struggling to think of her name, I think it might be Maddie, she's the main character, she's the lead character. So you could have a Boba Fett feature film, but really, if you were ballsy enough, if you had a good enough director, you could have a Boba Fett movie where he basically said nothing.
And I like that idea. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, it could be her relationship to him that the film centers around.
Mm-hmm.
That could be quite interesting.
Well, I'd be interested to see, because they did, in the Legends, they brought him back, because obviously they established in the Legends that he sort of survived the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah.
He turned up a few different times. He turned up in Dark Empire for the first time, you know, and it was a big deal, you know. He's like, oh, Boba Fett's back in, you know, he's in the comics and stuff. And then they brought him back about, I think it's 30 years after Jedi, in a series called, I want to say it's Legacy of the Force. It's all about Jason Solo's fall to the dark side and his revival as Darth Cadus. And Boba Fett turns up in that, and he's brought the Mandalorians back from the kind of, you know, from obscurity, and they become this kind of mercenary force again. Well, in that'd be another story arc I'd be interested to see. It's him turn up, you know, leading a band of Mandalorians back into sort of into the galaxy. Maybe not, you know, during the same period as the new trilogy, but in a separate part of the galaxy, maybe.
There is a couple.
It's a big place.
Couple of little wrinkles to that. The return of Boba Fett, escaping from the Sarlacc pit, is now canon. George Lucas canonized that element of the story on his way out of the door. So that's now a GL level canon element. So we know that he survived.
That's fine.
Yeah. Explain the canon thing, Mark.
Canon. Well, canon means that it is every story told before and up and after that element. It has a responsibility to that element, so it can no longer things that are no longer canon can be ignored by subsequent stories, like Chewie dying. That's no longer canon, so we get Chewie in Episode 7. If it's an element that's been canonized, like Boba Fett returning, Boba Fett can return now in a subsequent Star Wars movie, and we have to accept it because that is now part of the story that needs to be respected.
Right,
like Darth Maul's return. Even though on screen in the features...
When did Chewie die?
He died in a book called Vector Prime.
But was that an official book?
Series. It was at the time.
But now it's a part of what they're calling Legacy. Is it Legacy or Legend? Legends? It's part of Legends. Yeah. So that took place. It's a standalone story, but it's no longer... No one has to be responsible to that now. Otherwise, we wouldn't have Chewie in Episode 7.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in a nutshell, that's what that is. But also part of canon now, as I believe it, and so, by all means, if I'm wrong, and someone can correct me, please do so. But as far as I understand it, it's canon that Boba Fett isn't a Mandalorian. The armor's Mandalorian, but the man himself, he's not.
He's a modified clone, isn't he? So he technically he can't be.
Django wasn't Mandalorian.
Okay.
That's what I understand it coming out of the Clone Wars, that he wasn't from Mandalore or Concord Dawn or whatever the system is. He's not from there. He's a pretender. And it's just the armour that is Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. So,
Shouldn't Boba Fett look exactly like Jango Fett if you took his helmet off?
Yes.
Yes. But if you go on Episode 2.
Which is canon, so you do.
There's a gentleman named Paul Bateman, who is a superb artist, and he's also a podcaster. He appears every now and then on Rebel Force Radio on one of their shows called Influences. And this guy used to work with Ralph McQuarrie,
mm-hmm.
so he knows a lot about Star Wars, you know, what he doesn't know isn't worth knowing. And he came up with a great idea. He felt that a way to reboot Boba Fett would be to have somebody challenge Boba Fett, kill him, and take on the mantle. So take the armor, take Slave One, adopt the name, but it's someone else inside the suit. So you would no longer be a slave to the Boba Fett being a clone of Jango, not being a Mandalorian. You'd be able to add that element of mystery back into it.
Okay.
Which I don't think they do, but no. I'd like to think if they were going to do a Boba Fett set after the Sarlacc pit, that you jump forward a couple of decades, make Boba Fett a much older man, keep the helmet on, perhaps under that helmet he's all Deadpool-y because he's been rotting inside the thing. So, you know, it'd be nice, add that mystique back without retconning his origins or, like, Paul Bateman's idea is fantastic, but without having to go into that, the detail of that. I just want Boba Fett to enter stage left and then a story play out, and I don't really want to have to think about all the other minute details.
Yeah, on the subject of Boba Fett, I've just had a look and I found the source of the confirmation that he survived. So it came from Jonathan Rinsler, who's a Lucasfilm historian.
That's right.
Who did a Reddit AMA, which stands for Ask Me Anything, and it allows the community to ask questions to celebrities and people of interest and note, of which he's probably all three, actually. And the question was, does Boba Fett survive? And he said, yes, he does. I've been in meetings with George where he confirms that Fett survived. If it comes from George, then it's true. So there's your answer.
So why did they have him falling in the Sarlacc pit anyway?
Comic relief, I guess.
It did seem, didn't you remember at the time, even as a young person watching it for the in the cinema when it came out, I thought, well, there was two things. I mean, there's two sides. The first thing I thought was, oh my God, that's like a really pivotal character that everyone loves, and they've just killed him.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bit crap then, even as a young, like, I don't know how old it was, 12 or whatever it was.
1983,
And then the second thing I thought when they rehashed it all was, oh my God, that's the Little Shop of Horrors animal.
yeah.
Which completely ruined it for me.
I think
it's the plant out of Little Shop of Horrors. That's where the plant went, although maybe that's where it comes from.
Well, I think
the beaky thing wouldn't have been in it, the original.
No, I know. Yeah. No, but you know what I mean, when they redid it. But special what editions. In God's name was the artist thinking and George thinking when they said, yeah, that's the one we want, that baby-looking plant?
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, there are other more disturbing elements in the production design than that. I mean, we do carry on Star Wars with the best of them here, don't we, on TSW, but you think about what that Sarlacc pit looked like before they put the beak in it. That's something concerning. And don't get me started on Nien Numb's face.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Yes. There was definitely,
maybe they had to put the beak in.
Possibly.
No, I never made that correlation.
It took 20 years. It took 20 years for them to put the beak in, so someone didn't have a problem with it.
I never thought of that. I just thought it looked like a big sort of, it is like a digestive tract. It's supposed to be, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
It also looks a little bit like a Rathtar.
Yeah, kind of.
What's a Rathtar? Remind me. Oh, yes, the new things on Han Solo's freighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The roly things.
The roly things.
The meatballs and spaghetti.
Yeah.
But that was a stupid... I mean, when you think about it, George's lead up to episodes 1, 2, and 3, it was bound to happen because things were going south even in Return of the Jedi, weren't they?
Yeah.
Right. You know, but I still love Return of the Jedi. I have to say that is often my favourite Return of the Jedi.
Return of the Jedi is a great movie.
Even with the Ewoks.
Even with the Blu-ray transfer.
Now you've said the E
word.
That
is not kind.
Let's talk about... I just wanted to mention Space Bear a little bit, because obviously we discussed last time that Episode 8 is going under the... It has the working title of Space Bear. And just a little side note, the actual production company is called Space Bear Industries.
Okay.
It's Space Bear Industries UK.
All right.
Which I have from an inside source who's told me not to name him.
Fine. Mr. Ford.
Yeah. I'm just smiling at the thought of what he's doing when he hears me say that. Anyway, He's just like shaking one fist at the headphones.
This is their Shield company, right?
You're crazy, yeah, podcast.
The Shield company set up to protect them. Yeah, so that's Space Bear Industries UK. The film's title, working title, is Space Bears. This has got to be pointed at the Ewoks, hasn't it? It has to. And I've had this theory, and I put a Star Wars Insights up on the site last week.
Mm-hmm.
I think there might be a return to Endor, even if it's very brief, in some fashion in Episode 8. Okay. I think we're going to end up back on Endor.
I agree in from one simple premise, which is that I think they've been pretty clear that they're bringing in elements of the expanded universe and the legends in other forms. So we've had a son of Han Solo and Leia fall to the dark side. He's not called Jason, he's not Darth Cadus, he's Ben Solo and he's Kylo Ren, right? So we've had some kind of similar elements. Now, in Heir to the Empire, I want to say, there's a point where somebody flies through the orbit of Endor's forest moon, and I want to say it's Leia, but it might be Luke. I think it's Leia. And they get
Timothy
a kind Dane's of...
one.
Yes, yes, the really good ones with Thrawn and Mara Jade and stuff, yes. Yeah. Having said that, now I think about it, it could also be Mara Jade. I'm thinking it's a Force-sensitive character who goes flying through the orbit of the forest moon of Endor and gets a chill because of the dark side energy of Palpatine from his death.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I wonder if they might kind of touch on the dark side... there might be a dark side nexus there, or there might be a kind of, you know... Obviously, we know that Kylo Ren has been able to get Darth Vader's helmet from Endor, from Endor's forest moon. So it stands to reason that he knows, he either knows where to find it, or he knows somebody who does.
Well, this is this was kind of two things on this this subject, right? Firstly, there is a short story that features. There's a character dressed in like a Harley Quinn body stocking. She's laying on this great big bloated alien in Maz Kanata's castle in The Force Awakens. She gets and she makes the little radio call about BB-8. She's got a spin-off story where she goes on a mission. I haven't read it, so I'm speaking.
Hang on. Are you talking about The Perfect Weapon?
Yes, The Perfect Weapon.
Oh, is that her?
That's her, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So she, there seems to be some sort of indication that she does a job for Kylo Ren. Before the Force Awakens. And there's a lot of speculation that it's the retrieval of Vader's helmet from the funeral pyre on Endor.
Yeah, that's interesting, because in the book... So it's been out for long enough that I can do spoilers, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, of course.
So at the end of Perfect Weapon, she hands over the box without knowing what... she either doesn't know what's in it or it's not explained to the reader. Whether she's seen it or not, I can't quite remember. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely, at no point is it made clear what's in the box to the reader, one way or another. So I thought at the time it was Luke's lightsaber finding its way to somebody who's not Kylo Ren. Because I thought maybe that might be relevant. Obviously, we'd seen the lightsaber change hands in the trailer, but we didn't know who was giving it to who, for sure.
Yeah.
So I thought it was the lightsaber, but now you've said that, I like that theory.
Yeah, that I must point out that's not mine. I've heard that somewhere else. So
that's
full credit to whoever that was, whose name I've forgotten. I apologise.
I think it was such a shame about the lightsaber and the helmet that we didn't find out how they got. There was a thing where they were underwater, wasn't there, with the Millennium Falcon flying to the Death Star, and that would have been awesome because it would have tied the two movies together more, because really there wasn't a lot tying episode seven.
It would have to do a lot of that over a 3-decade span, and some of that is going to become really convoluted. But I do think
a simple thing like tying a bit of wreckage of the Death Star.
I think they might do a bit of that in episode 8 though, Steve, and that's what what I was focusing on in this edition of Insights last week, was two possible ways of doing it, because I think it's going to come out as exposition during Rey's training with Luke. And it can go, the information can flow one of two ways. It'll either be Luke explaining to Rey what happened with Ben Solo and his fall. And it might be that he mentions he went to Endor and pillaged Vader's grave and took the helmet and all that stuff. or the information could flow the other way. Luke doesn't know about it, and Rey could say, when I was in his custody, I saw these ashes, I saw this helmet. When I read his mind, it was filled with thoughts of Darth Vader. And then Luke mm-hmm. might take her to Endor to just check up on what she's saying and notice that the grave's been pillaged and the helmet's gone. Maybe the rest of Vader's armor's there, but the helmet's gone. You know, it could be that the two of them travel together to Endor when Rey tells Luke about what Kylo Ren's got in his possession. Or mm-hmm. we have a Force vision, like Rey's vision in The Force Awakens, with Luke narrating the events all the way through it. Kind of like that thing in that Harry Potter film where they did the Deathly Hallows story, you know, in like a puppet.
Oh, that's
like
puppet
animation.
That was brilliant.
Without the puppet animation, obviously, you could do like full-on show us everything like they did in the vision in The Force Awakens, but with Luke narrating over the top of it. You know, like my student went rogue, went to Endor, took this stuff, mm-hmm. took the ashes.
Maybe they'll use Cloud City footage then.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, apparently it's out there. Which is a silky Steve-shaped segue to talking about the Blu-rays. We've got a list of Blu-ray special features this week, and that scene isn't among them, unfortunately.
So maybe it's being held back for Episode 8.
Maybe.
It could be held back for a double dip on the Blu-ray later in the year, because we know there's 3D to come out.
Yeah, I want to know how Luke... Going back to your Luke thing, I meant to say this earlier, but I forgot. I want to know, and I know we're going to talk about this later, so I'm not going to talk about that. I want to know how Luke's going to react when he finds out Han's dead. And hopefully
he must
it's
know.
Not real.
He must know.
I think he knows.
What, from the Force side?
Yeah. I think he'll know from that.
Because even, you know, characters who aren't connected to the Force direct in a more meaningful way, like Han, are still going to resonate as people, as personalities. I mean, Luke knows Han's kind of character, and so he's probably able to sense him in the Force. So you would think he would feel the void.
Maybe that's why Luke looked so pissed off and sad when Rey approached him.
Maybe. Yeah.
It's going to be very strange, isn't it? Because he looks so different, Mark Hamill.
Yes.
That's the thing, when you're an actor, you've got to not only be Mark Hamill, you've got to remember how you acted out Luke Skywalker, and so that, like Han Solo does, and it must be hard to get back into that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They must sit there and go, what are the nuances of that part?
Yeah.
And it isn't
altering it to layer in subsequent decades of experience and
how do you do it? Because I want it, it's got to feel like Luke Skywalker, hasn't it?
Yes.
And his mannerisms and the way he talked and his a little bit of innocence, which was slowly lost.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to say, Steve, it does depend really on what they intend to do with the character. Because if we are to believe that Luke is going to be this paragon of virtue in the new film, then it's probably not much of a leap from the guy he was in Empire and most of Jedi. Because remember, there was some dark side Luke in Jedi as well, wasn't there?
Yes.
So if he has become this virtuous, wise, old Jedi sage, then great. But what if he's not? What if he's something else?
Just a kind of disillusioned, you know.
It could be bitter. It could be that once you start with using the dark side, perhaps you can't shake it off.
Forever will it dominate your destiny.
Yeah, like herpes.
Okay.
The Blu-ray is coming out on 18th of April in the UK.
Got mine pre-ordered.
It will not include that Cloud City lightsaber duel to which we were just referring.
I'm cancelling my pre-order now.
It has got a bunch of really cool things on it, though. It's got a feature length, which unfortunately only means about an hour, Secrets of the Force Awakens Cinematic Journey documentary, which is actually screening at South by Southwest next weekend. So we should start
to hear
something.
I think South by Southwest is going on now, isn't it?
Oh, is it this weekend?
I think so. I feel like I've seen news about it somewhere. I don't know what it was about, though.
I'm sure it's
this weekend. Unless it goes on for a while. I mean, it might be a long
convention. I think it ends next weekend.
it could be one weekend to the other then.
Yeah.
But I've definitely seen some sort of panel about come out about it, but I can't remember what it was. For the life of me. It's bugging me
can
now.
Can I ask you a question, Rob?
Go for it.
I'm about 15 minutes behind in life.
Right.
I need to, just very quickly, is Heir to the Empire canonised? I meant to ask this earlier.
No. The only things that are canonised from it are...
I know they have twins, and I thought, oh, maybe it is.
Thrawn is coming back, apparently, in Rebels. Rebels.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, Rebels.
Which would be interesting, because they'll have kind of... From what I've seen, he seems to come back as a kind of exile. Like, he's been sort of... I thought I saw something with him being led around in stone cuffs, would suggest to me he's a sort of prisoner or something, which would be really weird, because they'd have completely redone the origin story, which I wouldn't be a massive fan of. But, you know, at the same time, that's only because I'm such a massive fan of Timothy Zahn's adaptation of it. But he's the only thing that's officially been brought back into canon. There's been talk that Mara Jade might find her way back in, possibly through Rebels or something like that. But I don't think I've seen anything concrete come through about that.
Laura Dern, maybe?
No.
In episode 8? I don't know. Do you not think?
Laura Dern from Jurassic Park?
Yeah, she's in episode 8. Yeah.
Blimey. Oh, yeah, we spoke about this, didn't we? That she hadn't done anything, and then all of a sudden she's in episode 8. It's like,
yeah.
Sorry, that was a huge tangent, Mark. Sorry.
It's a good point, though, what you're saying about, is it... Because, I mean, it is this celebrated book that I've never read, but I'll tell you what, I promise you that'll be my next Audible purchase.
Yes.
The Heir to the Empire.
Oh, don't do the audio book on Audible, because it's abridged and it's not a fantastic adaptation from what I understand.
Okay, I'll Kindle.
It is read by Dennis Lawson though, so that's quite cool.
I've actually got it on cassette.
Oh wow, really? Okay.
Oh, perhaps I should borrow that and see if I can find a cassette player.
I'll dig it out of the loft. I'll dig it out of the loft. I've definitely got it somewhere. I've got the book as well, Mark, if you want the paperback.
Yeah,
I know.
I'm not actually going to touch physical media.
I know.
It's me.
I can barely touch myself. Anyway, moving on.
Oh my!
You're turning this into a right smutty episode tonight. Smutty now.
Let's carry on, Star Wars.
Oh my!
Okay, so let's jump. We're going to jump over a couple of bits because these are. I've got some really old stories in here from.
Okay.
Before I went on holiday. Did you see the photograph of the land speeder on the Dubrovnik location?
Oh, no, I didn't. I'm going to have to look this up now.
Go to makingstarwars.net.
I was just going to search land speeder Dubrovnik.
When you find it, Rob, paste it into the show notes so we can have a gander.
It is really cool. It's basically like Luke's from the first film.
Oh, okay.
But imagine it.
Oh, hang on.
Didn't Luke make his land speeder anyway?
I don't know if he made it. I got the impression. I think Lucas might have said that was the old family car, and then when Owen and Baru got something new, it got handed down, like passed down to Luke.
Okay.
Because that's the way things were done in Lucas's generation.
Much like the 70s and 80s here.
Yeah.
That's
you end up with a shitty old Fiesta.
That's really interesting. I'm going to send you a link in the chat now, and it's a website that's been set up called StarWarsDubrovnik.com, and it's a blog that's made by some people who do a tourist website for Dubrovnik, DubrovnikDigest.com.
Yeah.
And they've got loads of sort of shots of bits and bobs. They got pictures of people that look like they've set up a sort of cafe outside, but in a kind of Star Wars themed, you know, it has a look of Star Wars to it. There's pictures of actors in headgear and alien masks and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But where are these pictures from?
Dubrovnik.
They're just kind of
the Dubrovnik aerial set.
Aerial shots, long-range shots.
Oh, from episode 8?
Yes, mate.
Apparently, they must be.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though they've been sort of cracking down on spy photos and drones, because they've employed like a drone force, haven't they, to take down any invading drones with cameras on.
How do they
with BB guns or something. Or BB-8 guns.
No, I'm not. I think they've got full-on 50 caliber weaponry mounted on them. Or photon plasma. I'm not sure.
Maybe they track...
There's a drone that protects the Eiffel Tower, right? And it's capable of swooping in and picking up little drones with a net.
Wow.
Not a girl named it. Not a girl named a net. An actual
very
net.
Very interesting.
But why? What do they... I suppose someone could strap a BOMB to a drone, couldn't they?
Yeah. I don't know if you have to spell that. I don't know if you have to spell that out on a podcast.
You can't say that. The FBI will come.
No, you can't say it in an airport, Steve. You can say that. You can say it on our podcast if you want to.
I don't. I'm scared of the FBI and the CIA.
You have to. You kind of have to spell it. I'm looking at
very interesting. So, have you been? Are you scrolling down by any chance, Mark? Because I found some very interesting stuff down there.
Yeah, I can see Toad of Toad Hall is actually present in those photographs.
I like the second alien. There's, obviously, our listeners will have
alien,
to know it.
The alien the with one the white, in the white sort of. Yeah, it's the alien from. Isn't it? It's from Prometheus, the snake alien, all grown up.
Yeah, that is very strange. That big head. It looks like a big cat.
That's the land speeder.
Here's something very interesting, right? Now, this is going to kind of tie into a. You know, we might spin off into a theory from this.
Oh, good.
So
I like
I'm
that.
Looking. Oh yeah, yeah. I'm looking down the page, and my eye is drawn to a couple of things. So first of all, I'm seeing there's a picture of a crashed land speeder.
Yes.
So it's a land speeder that's crashed into a wall with a missing chunk of brick laid on top of it. And it's actually a blue and white land speeder, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But I mean, that could just be one of those things. Obviously, there's been 30 years since the original, 30 plus years since the original trilogy. So technology can advance and it can look a bit nicer. Could also be a kind of boy racer character who's crashed it because they've swerved to miss something in a comic relief moment or something like that, couldn't it?
Well, don't do comic relief. Are you saying that this... Because this looks like Anakin's pod racer to me, the colours.
A little bit. It also kind of... It's the shape of it kind of strikes me in a way... It kind of brings back memories of their speeder from episode 2. You know, the one they're sort of flying around.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe it goes through a kind of crash there. That's not the bit that caught my eye. What caught my eye is there are lots of pictures of extras, various, you know, aliens and humans alike, in black robes. Yes. Now, further down is a picture of Michael Kaplan holding a draft for Princess Leia in a funeral shroud. So she's in a kind of black hooded...
Oh, do you think they're making up for their We Don't Care About Han in episode 7?
Where is that?
I don't know.
Where is that, Rob? Where are you seeing that?
So this is the first page.
Yeah.
Second story from the bottom.
I can't see that. I've got a crashed land speeder picture. Yes. With the white alien.
A bit further down than that. There's a bloke on a plane, and he's holding a pair of pictures. Oh, blimey. I'm not going to say what one of the pictures looks like.
I can't see it.
It'll be a carry-on Star Wars thing.
Can you see it, Mark?
No, I can't.
Yeah, I'll just send you the link. So this is on the main page. So maybe I've sent you the link to the individual article.
Yeah, all
right,
I'm gonna
that one. Right. So if somebody just goes,
our listeners won't know what the hell we're looking. We'll have to put these links in the show notes.
So listeners, go to StarWarsDubrovnik.com. Without clicking into the article, start scrolling down the page. Second from the bottom on page one, as of the time of recording, it's an article dated from. Here we go. I'll find the date. That's easier, isn't it? March the 12th. So these seem to be happening pretty thick and fast, because that's yesterday.
Yeah, they hadn't been shooting very long. They've only been shooting there since this past week.
There you go. These are photos from yesterday. So these are very very these are coming thick and fast because there's been about 10 posts since then.
Oh yeah.
Now see that one. So there's a picture of a guy, Michael Kaplan. Who is a...
I can see what you mean about the image on the right.
Costume designer. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Controversial.
Yeah, so... Yeah,
it could be...
It's interesting that you've got the funeral shroud look there. Because it makes me wonder whose funeral she's attending. Are they having a proper service for Han Solo?
Yeah, I would
think. Are we actually then looking at Corellia?
Ooh...
Because we've never seen it, but we know he's Corellian.
Good call.
Or do we know he's Corellian?
Rob,
I
suggest you write this up for the site, old chap, because that is a bit of a breakthrough.
Could be.
I like that idea.
I'm still having trouble finding the Princess Leia one, but I think you're bang on with that. It's going to be, I think they'll go big on Han's loss of Han because they underplayed it in episode 7.
Yeah. Should we talk about that for a second?
Sure.
What JJ said this week?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. JJ Abrams has admitted that he dropped the ball in The Force Awakens, which I don't think we've ever heard anyone in Star Wars admit to such a thing, which is refreshing. His point was that, and Jeremy actually wrote this up on the site, which was a very good article. JJ's point was that he wanted Leia and Rey to connect. And unfortunately, when they blocked the scene, Chewie was there, and he ended up deciding to himself that he thought it made sense that Chewie would be focused on Finn, and he'd have the interests, or Finn's well-being would be his primary consideration at that time, which is why he walked straight past Leia after all of their connection and left Leia to greet Rey. His reasoning, I think, is kind of sound, that Leia and Rey would have made a connection anyway.
Yeah.
Through the Force, they would have made a connection of sorts. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to just kind of get around the whole Chewie and Leia acknowledging the loss to Han thing and get to that connection between Leia and Rey. How do you guys feel about JJ saying he's made a mistake?
I think that's good. Yeah. You know, I think we all need to know it's okay to come back and say we made a mistake after the fact, and that's okay.
Do you agree? Do you agree that that was a mistake? I know, Steve, you've had issues from day one with the fact.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
You go first, Rob.
No, go ahead, mate.
I think personally, if you've made a mistake, we are talking about a film here. It's not like something that's set in stone, like this, the Ten Commandments. Put it in the Blu-ray, and just film a scene with Leia getting a bit more upset and giving Chewie a cuddle. It's all doable.
It might exist. We don't know that it wasn't filmed.
Like, why are they so like adamant that they can't? Yeah, I mean, I know George Lucas messed it all up by changing things until it was just a pile of rubbish.
Right.
But you can positively change things and correct things. It's like, I always think that when you find like a really bad mistake in a film, like you can see, you know, like the lead coming from the lightsaber down Obi-Wan's sleeve and stuff like that, change it when you've got the technology. Why would you want to keep it in there? We're talking about the willing suspension of disbelief, you know, and you like, why are they so adverse to changing things? I think make it more believable, get her to hug Chewie and be done with it. Don't just admit it wrong.
That scene might exist on the Blu-ray because, like, say, he says that it's not, you know, he's apologizing for it not being in the final cut. It doesn't necessarily mean it wasn't filmed.
That's true.
So it'd be interesting to see if there's an extended version of that scene on the Blu-ray.
Yeah, but you've got to go and look for it, haven't you?
It's not
part of the film, though. I don't have to stop the film, go and look at the thing, go, right, and now she hugs Chewie, and then it's back again. Mm. Like, whack it in the film.
Mm. But then, we have had corrections that have kind of improved certain small elements. I mean, for example, George Lucas added, I know we're not, you know, some of the cast are less of a fan of George Lucas's additions. I do understand it, but you know, there's one in particular that I do really like, which is obviously the most famous movie mistake of all time, is the stormtrooper banging his head on the girder as he comes through in the first Death Star, and George Lucas, rather than take it out, actually added a metal pang so that it was properly, you know, audible, whereas before it was just a thing that happened in the background. He actually added a small sort of collision noise to make it a bit more authentic. He actually introduced it, you know, he kind of owned that mistake. Obviously it wasn't his mistake to own as such, but he added it into the movie because he he enjoyed that kind of that element of it. So it can be done.
And they even reference it in episode 2 as well by having Django bang his head on the Slave 1 door.
Yeah, exactly.
And they had the same sound effect in there as well.
Yeah.
Because I know Vader walks through a bit of metal, doesn't he, in one of the...
Yeah, it's the shuttle when it lands on Endor. His head passes through the body of the ship. I think, you know, there are production mistakes that are little curios that you can overlook. Mm-hmm. Like, for the longest time, I think only the Blu-ray put this right, for the longest time, Vader's walking around with a white stick for a lightsaber on the Death Star, and then they finally coloured it in. And every time we got a special edition, I thought, well, I hope they sort that out, and then they didn't. And I couldn't believe that kept sneaking through. But I think this whole thing of choosing not to have Chewie comfort Leia or vice versa on their arrival on, is it Takodana, the Rebel base?
That sounds right.
Choosing not to do that is a little bit more than just an oversight. That's a massive narrative decision that was made, and it probably was a bum decision. I didn't really give it any thought, Steve, until you mentioned it when we did our initial review. I never really thought much about it.
The whole sort of feeling at the end of the film was that no one cared about Han, and that would have been like dissuaded if there was a bit more emotion from people that are supposed to have cared about him. So that was probably why I came out, things like that, those sort of omissions were probably why I came out feeling like that. But like, I know JJ is really averse to making these changes post-production because he knows it's been done overkill by George Lucas.
Yeah.
And but I don't think that's a reason not to do it for the right reasons.
I really,
that's fair enough.
I see what you're saying, and I guess there could be just a slight alteration in there. They could even do it whilst they're shooting. They've done this before. Whilst they're shooting one feature, do a drop-in for another. The Palpatine scene in Empire Strikes Back, that was filmed during Revenge of the Sith. So Ian McDiarmid did the Palpatine talking to Vader about Luke, who Luke was, you know, when he kneels. The What is thy bidding, that scene? My favourite scene of the whole saga, actually.
Yes, it's pretty cool.
That was filmed during Revenge of the Sith, so they dropped that in there. So they could do something.
Which scene? What, the scene in Empire?
The scene in Empire,
Originally, that was an old lady with chimpanzee eyes.
That's it. Which is
in the original Empire Strikes Back. It's ridiculous, isn't it? I'd never thought in my life I'd ever have to say that sentence.
Oh, what? And then they dropped in the real Palpatine.
After the fact, yeah.
There's about you should go to YouTube, Steve. There's about the four versions of that scene.
Yes.
Wow. I kind of remember. Didn't it look a bit like E.T.?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
And then there was another version without the chimpies.
Yes.
And ultimately we end up with Ian McDiarmid from from Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a weird, like I say, it's a weird sentence to have to utter in 2016. Images. Is that the original one was an old woman with chimpanzee eyes, and that's why I'm not allowed to be a doctor anymore.
I don't have a problem with different iterations of the same film if they are progressive and they make it better each time. Yeah. I really don't like, because
fair enough.
I mean, agree with
the
you.
Trouble 100%. Is until fans see the film, they can't give their opinion.
Yeah, there is that.
And I know a lot of people are pissed off about it.
For me personally, it doesn't. To be honest, I didn't even think about it. The thing I kind of took away from that was that Chewie seemed to get over it really quickly. Yeah. So he was sort of, you know, back to sitting in the co-pilot seat going, hang on a minute, you know, surely there should be a line of succession here, but I won't say anything.
He still doesn't get that right, well, left-hand seat, does he?
No, he doesn't. It just seems a bit, you know. That struck me as odd. That and the fact that he was kind of, you know, he just seemed to be like, all right, where are we off to then?
Jeremy thinks this because
I don't want to go anywhere.
There should have been a scene between them landing and then him hugging Leia. There should then have been a scene to give the feeling that a little bit of time had passed, like maybe a few weeks.
Yeah.
So that would be you good. Could understand that they were all just, okay, move on. We need to go and do this.
Or more of a sense of urgency. They could have done something with Leia just sort of going to Chewie and saying, our grief is going to have to wait. You need to get her to Luke. And then you just, it's a real throwaway thing. You can speed straight through it and say, he's got to bottle up this grief because he's got something to do. You know, he's still a part of the resistance. He's not just the dog.
I think for that reason, they will probably go completely the other way in episode 8 and have a lot about the death of Han, more than you'd expect.
Yeah, that could be cool. And this is why I'm thinking now. I like this. I'm going to, like, I'm definitely going to run with this idea of writing up the theory.
Yeah, I like that theory.
Because that could be interesting. I mean, you know, at no point am I saying this is going to be what's happening, but it does make for an interesting thought.
I think that you might even see Chewie hugging Leia in episode 8.
Yeah, as a kind of, you know, like a kind of after the fact, the director's almost way of saying, yeah, we know, yeah. Come on, all right.
You know what, I would like to see if the images we've just seen from the Dubrovnik set or location, if they are a funeral with everybody dressed in black, and that shot we've seen of Carrie Fisher mocked up in that black sort of mourning gown, if that is Han's, a memorial for Han in some way, I would like to see it masking something else. So if everyone turns up under the, you know, under the shroud of this, or we're meeting to memorialise Han Solo, hero with the resistance and hero with the rebellion, all that sort of stuff, but really it's hiding a secret meeting, perhaps between somebody from the Republic is meeting Leia, because we know Leia's kind of on the outside edges of the Republic now, isn't she? She's being kept at arm's length.
Oh, so it could be a front.
It's a facade.
That funeral, the whole that kind of memorial could be a facade,
so that she can secretly meet with somebody and they can
talk about that.
Some sort of movement, some First Order movement. You know, maybe the First Order, because we already know that the very production of Starkiller Base and even the finalizer. Yeah. Star Destroyer is all flies in the face of the agreement the First Order had with the Republic.
The Republic, yeah.
And there are elements of the Republic that are corrupt. So perhaps we're going to start to see a new rebellion form in the Republic, and they'll reach out to Leia at Han's funeral. That would be... I would like to see that have dual purpose, because I think if we just stop and memorialise Han Solo, that's not a Star Wars film. That's too slow.
It's very slow. Yeah, I like that idea
Something
a lot.
Something else needs to be going on.
It ties in really nicely. So I just picked up the latest issue of Star Wars Insider for a bit of, you know, well, a bit of research, and also because it's Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So that's
you
the monthly
that
magazine.
As a business expense,
if only. any kind of jokes about that, I have to preface with a legal disclaimer that, as far as HMRC are concerned, nothing like that is happening. Because I've had all sorts of trouble.
Do you need to state your name? Do you need to state your name before that statement?
No, it's all fine. So in the Insider, they've got a little synopsis about the upcoming expanded new canon novel, Bloodline.
Oh, yeah.
So let me just see if I can find the kind of gist of it.
That's Claudia Gray's new book.
That's Claudia Gray's new book, yeah. So you go with your question, Stephen. I'll have a skim of this and I can summarise it.
It kind of relates to what we were just talking about. We were talking about possibly throwing in the things that were missed in episode 7. Is JJ, has he got the right? What's his level of involvement in episode 8? Can he do that? Can he advise? Can he ask or ask for a favour? Like,
I think he could.
Yeah, they do. He has worked very closely with Ryan Johnson and Colin Trevorrow on their scripts, even before production was complete on The Force Awakens. So he could make the adjustments that needed to be made to accommodate things that they wanted to do in the subsequent movies. So there's no reason why, as executive producer, which he is, he is the executive producer of this film, there's no reason why he can't at least approach Ryan Johnson and say, can he accommodate me with this? Whatever, the ABCs of it all, but...
So circling back a bit to the discussion we were having about a memorial, am I right in thinking that a little while back there were rumblings that Lando would turn up in episode 8?
Yes.
Now that would, to me, if they're having a memorial for Han Solo, there is your opportunity to bring him in.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
You don't even need to do, can actually, oh mate, this is kind of throwing all sorts of spanners into my works as I'm going along.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to postulate a kind of a basic theory here. So a memorial takes place on a planet. Doesn't necessarily have to be Corellia, but obviously, like I say, being as it's Han Solo's home planet, that's the one that jumps in my head. Leia meets with Lando to establish, among other things, why Luke's lightsaber found its way to Maz Kanata. That would be one of the things that would be interesting to, because that would be one of those interesting things to find out, because that we already know from various different sources, interviews and so on, that there's a lot more to Maz Kanata than we know.
Mm-hmm.
And if and she's kind of...
Rob, I just want to ask you a question, just stop you there and you can carry on. Is she asking Lando because the lightsaber fell down in Cloud City? And it's probably
that's my thinking. Okay, yeah. So if anybody should know where how that would happen, he would know. If anybody would, he might know. He could would have insight into that. So that might be an intrigue plot that's kind of going on behind the scenes in Episode 8, that he's trying to find out this stuff, you know, trying to figure out how this had happened. Towards the end of the film, you might learn as a result that Maz Kanata can't be trusted, or she's, you know, in some way insidious. Not a play on words there. I'd literally just mean the word.
Yeah.
So I've had to read through this synopsis here. So to give you a kind of brief overview of what this book does, it's set 6 years before Force Awakens, and it deals with the events of the rise of the Resistance and the rise of the First Order. So Leia is part of the Republic at this point, and she's trying to keep the New Republic together, and they're starting to talk about the election of a first senator. So that would be somebody who would kind of bring a figurehead for the government, and she's reluctant to do that because she's seen what happens with Sidious and Vader when you put a figurehead of a kind of at the head of government with all the power.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a kind of, by the sounds of it, there's a sort of a dual play going on where she's considering starting a new rebellion against the New Republic.
Yeah. Oh, against
which is the impression it's with the impression I get anyway, from the book, whether she's kind of toying with the idea of breaking off and doing her own thing from the New Republic itself. And obviously we know from the film that that's what she's gone on to do, but obviously that's a kind of, there's much more of a more followed truce between the two, with the Republic and the Resistance, you know, that's been established pretty clearly.
Yeah. But then a lot of what I can gather, because again, this isn't really explicit in The Force Awakens, but there is a character on Hosnian Prime.
Yes.
The planet that's destroyed in The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
I think her name's Corsella. And she was...
That sounds right.
She's Leia's, not so much emissary, but she's a conduit into everything that's going on in the Republic. Corsella is Leia's source, for want of a better word. She's Leia's keeping a finger on the pulse.
Yeah.
With Hosnian Prime being wiped out, it looks like any allies that Leia might have had in the Republic are gone.
Potentially, so yeah.
We could speculate that in Episode 8, perhaps the Republic is basically unfriendly forces. So
could
maybe
be,
if we could say that there's something to our new theory that Han's memorial is...
I like this.
Is a place where Leia can start to build new connections. Perhaps we'll see her talking to characters like Mon Mothma, perhaps mm-hmm. Lando. They wouldn't be able to meet with Leia in the light of day if they're part mm-hmm. of the Republic, because remember the Republic's rotten from the inside out now. Even though they might be a few of the last good ones remaining.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever central system is now the core of the Republic, maybe Coruscant, but who knows? That whole memorial service for Han might be where she meets Lando and Mon mm-hmm. Mothma, and they're her eyes and ears inside the Republic, where we're seeing the seeds of a new rebellion growing.
Yeah, because if we remember, the last time we saw Lando, he was actually a Republic general. He was a Rebellion general. He wasn't the Cloud City administrator anymore, because he kind of, you know, he handed his notice in the most public way possible.
Yeah.
So, you know, he could serve a dual purpose in that film. He could not only be a kind of contact within the Republic to start the seeds of a new rebellion, he could also be her contact into getting in touch with the people at Cloud City who are still there. Obviously, we've established that, you know, Lobot can't turn up again, because unfortunately the actor who played him has passed away. So they John may have Rollins, to, if they were to, yeah, if they were to bring him back, they'd have to do it as another actor. Whether or not they'd want to do that, I wouldn't want to suggest, you know, I wouldn't do it. I'd bring in a new character instead.
Yeah, that would be fair.
And maybe they would. I think they probably would. But, you know, Lando could fill that dual role. He could answer, he could be responsible for answering, you know, either answering the questions or obtaining answers to the questions over the course of the film. About the kind of political, some of the more political intrigue stuff, because, you know, we know we're gonna get, you know, some dark side stuff. We're gonna get some light side stuff. The political side of things we haven't really thought about much. And here's a thought: we know Benicio del Toro is in this film. We don't know what he's doing now. Right. We've speculated before, which I still like as a theory, that he could be one of the Knights of Ren. Or even Ren, you know, the kind of the sort of person coordinating them all, or a kind of. Here's a thought: what if he is that first senator that's being hinted at in the book Bloodline? Maybe he's that first senator, that kind of figurehead person within the New Republic who's maybe a little bit dodgy, because he does play those really good complex characters well.
He has said he's a villain as well. So,
has he?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
He said on Spanish television.
He could be the first senator. Because by the sounds of it, they're sort of setting this first senator up as a bit of a wrong'un, or at least a corruptible element. So whether or not that's the case, we don't know, but it could be interesting to... It's an interesting thought.
There's a good theory on the boil here, isn't there, I think?
There is. Oh, I need to... Yeah, I need to think on this.
Yes.
There's a lot here to unpack.
Okay. I think they need
not
to...
Not right now, obviously.
No, we'll leave that in your capable hands, Rob.
Go for it.
Yep. Steve?
I think they need, in the next film, I think they need to, like, get Leia's character sorted out, because she was the most unconvincing out of all of the ones in Seven. Not only from, a really, like, underwhelming part, but also as an actual actress, it wasn't her fault, I don't think. I just didn't think she had the chance
I have a suspicion on this one. This is based on reading the novelization. Speaking of which, there's a really good article in the Insider magazine this month about the novelization, for both for adults and for kids. Apparently there was a junior novelization as well. Yeah, I think I was interested because the audiobook apparently was delayed until early January. I didn't notice that, but, you know, it may well be the case. I wasn't sure, but...
yeah, it was. The e-book came out earlier, I think, and then the hardback came out. I think the e-book came out the day the film was
released. Yes, it did, yeah.
Released,
yeah. But there's a lot more... I think part of the problem is, I think a lot of Leia scenes were cut or never filmed from the overall story. Because there's a lot more development in the book of her character and some of the stuff that she should be doing. You know, obviously, and that's the thing. We don't know. When we see the Hosnian Prime being destroyed, we don't know, if we would just watch the film, that if not for not wanting to go for whatever reason, Leia would have been on that planet instead. So we wouldn't know that from watching the film, but it is in the book. So there's a lot more depth to her character. Because there's a lot of explanation of her thinking, you know, she's having to rest the weight of the galaxy on her shoulders because Luke's nowhere to be found. And she's actually, as much as wanting him back, she's also annoyed with him in the book, you know, that he's gone and stuff.
Yeah.
You're still there, Rob. We lost you.
Have you?
Oh, sorry. Oh, you dropped there. Out just for a heartbeat.
I thought we lost him as well. See, I think I just didn't think Leia was spunky at all. Like, okay. And that's in the first three films, she was like she was quick witted and she had a little bit of fun. And I know she's miserable now. I get that, but you're talking about Star Wars, and I just think, you know, there could have been a little bit of play in there with Han, and a bit, you know, and you know, the walking carpet type thing. And it's kind of, it was all kind of, she was just so flat. There was almost, it's like flatlined scenes. There was just nothing.
Yeah, well, I think with Harrison Ford not being involved in 8, there's plenty of room now for Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher to really take over that role.
Yeah, I want to see the scene on the bridge again, you know, in Ewok City, in Endor.
Yeah.
You know, when they're talking on the bridge. I know it's not a fun subject, but it's a deep conversation they're having, and you can see their characters, the things that make them Leia and Luke, come out.
Yeah.
I don't expect to see them together until the end.
No, I think episode 8 is where you're going to see Leia develop. Mm. And if this theory we're kind of, you know, cooking holds water, then actually you'll see a lot of that, probably more than we're prepared for.
Well, I'm pouring more water into it, Rob.
Is Carrie Fisher capable of... Not, I don't mean this in a derogatory way. I don't know what Carrie Fisher's been in. Is she... She might not have the will or the inclination to be Leia anymore. But is she...
Okay. Oh, she's still got the quick wits.
Yeah,
She's one of the funniest of the cast.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know, but I didn't know how invested she is.
I think
I'm judging her on those scenes, and it's probably wrong.
I mean, imagine this, right? If we're right, this is all going off of this new Han's memorial theory, right?
Yeah.
If she takes over one half of the story responsibilities in this, and she's trying to spark the flame of rebellion and get this thing back on its feet from the ruins of this rotting republic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine her going to Corellia, to the memorial service, to meet Mon Mothma, meet Lando, and get these things going. And she goes, and she's escorted by Finn and Poe, and this is where all this action breaks out on that planet with the crash speeders and all that sort of stuff.
Ooh, yeah.
And then the other side of the story will be Luke and Rey and possibly the droids, maybe Chewie. Well, actually, I think Chewie would probably be better served to be with Leia and Poe and at the memorial service. So. But you'll have the Force side of the story with Luke training Rey and Snoke training Kylo, and then you'll have the political side of the story, which is Leia trying to reboot the rebellion and fight the First Order politically.
Or even just trying to ally up the rebellion and the resistance in a more formal way, because obviously, you know, like we said, it's been a very fractious relationship from what we've been led to understand. So maybe she'll kind of redouble her efforts to unite them against a common enemy.
Because the parallel's there to the first movie, isn't it? Because instead of it being the Republic, it was the Imperial Senate. And inside the Imperial Senate was this rebellion being formed. So it could be now we're going to start to see that again now, that it's the Republic that's going to fall.
If 10% of this stuff makes it into the final film, it will be amazing, won't it?
I wouldn't be surprised. We landed a few hits when we were predicting the last one, so I suspect this we might be onto something here.
Maybe.
I think the only possible downfall of all of those ideas, which are brilliant, is that I think they're probably planned a lot more for us old school people that has been cut because of the further involvement by John Boyega and Daisy Ridley, because they were so well received. What's gone that we would have had in the old characters, because they're going to be in it more?
Well, I think what went to make room for more Daisy and more John Boyega, I think it was more John Boyega, really. I'm pretty sure Daisy Ridley had her workload cut out for her off the back of
pretty
episode
much,
7.
Yeah.
I think it was John Boyega that they wanted to pad out, and Oscar Isaac as well. I suspect perhaps if we're right, and again, this is a huge maybe, but if Leia has to travel with escorts, perhaps the new members of the cast that were going to be brought in were going to be her escorts. And then
maybe
Ryan saw how Oscar Isaac and John Boyega were either underutilized or well received. I mean, they're two sides of the same coin, those two things. But maybe he thought, let's jettison new characters in those roles and we'll just put these guys in those roles. There's plenty of action there. They're tied to her.
Maybe,
so, you know, it could be that. I don't think we've lost new characters.
Yeah,
bulking out established ones.
That's one thing I was going to say, is I don't think we've necessarily, just because we've had things added, parts expanded for characters, it doesn't necessarily mean we've lost anything from the film.
No.
What we might just see is them take a role that wasn't originally meant for them.
How gutted would you be if you had one of those parts?
Yeah, I could be pretty sick.
Well, yeah, you know.
Star Wars is littered with those characters, though.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, I mean, James Arnold Taylor.
Yeah.
Was all set to be the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi in Episode 7, and then Ewan McGregor answers the phone.
Yeah, answers the phone and eats his lunch.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I've said it before. I'm sure he got paid for that scene, so I don't think he's too bothered.
Yeah, and he did other stuff. He's in the credits. He did other stuff.
He does other stuff. He's fine. He's not. He doesn't seem to me to be scrambling for rent. I'm sure he's done very well out of Star Wars already up till now.
I think you're probably right. Several years on TV.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
We're at 1:20. I think we'd probably do well to wrap this up. There's a couple of Rogue One bits in there, but I don't really want to rush through them. So perhaps we'll try and squeeze them in on the next episode.
Do a bit more. Do a bit more on Rogue One in more depth next time round. Because hopefully we might have some more by then.
Yeah, there's some pretty exciting things in there. So all right, I'll take the Rogue One elements out of this set of show notes and paste them into the next one.
Cool.
Right, chaps, where can people find you between shows?
I'm not doing anything at the moment. I'm still on YouTube and I've got my channel running, Calistine, Calistein, but it's kind of dead until the insects come out in spring. That sounded weird.
Yeah, it is rather.
Some peculiar sentences on this show tonight.
Neither can live while the other survives.
Rob, where can people find you, mate?
So you can find me at emotionally14.com. That's emotionally14 with digits, not letters. That's got a Twitter at emotionally14, YouTube at emotionally14. I'm on Twitter myself at Rob Wade Vision. And obviously you can find me on Talk Star Wars.
Excellent. And you can find everything else that's going on by searching at Talk Star Wars. You'll find me on Twitter there. You'll find Jeremy on there as well. TalkStarWars.co.uk for everything we write. There's plenty of links down below, Facebook, YouTube. Click away to your heart's content, and we will catch up with you next week.
See you later.
Bye bye. Nee,